Random House Audiobooks presents Intensity by Dean Koontz. Read for you by Kate Burton.
Intensity. The red sun balances on the highest ramparts of the mountains, and in its waning light, the foothills appear to be ablaze. A cool breeze blows down out of the sun and fans through the tall, dry grass, which streams like waves of golden fire along the slopes toward the rich and shadowed valley. In the knee-high grass, he stands with his hands in the pockets of his denim jacket, studying the vineyards below. The vines were pruned during the winter. The new growing season has just begun. The colorful wild mustard that flourished between the rows during the colder months has been chopped back and the stubble plowed under. The earth is dark and fertile. The vineyards encircle a barn, outbuildings, and a bungalow for the caretaker. Except for the barn, the largest structure is the owner's Victorian house with its gables, dormers, decorative millwork under the eaves, and carved pediment over the front porch steps. Paul and Sarah Templeton live in the house year-round, and their daughter, Laura, visits occasionally from San Francisco, where she attends university. She is supposed to be in residence throughout this weekend. He dreamily contemplates a mental image of Laura's face, as detailed as a photograph. Curiously, the girl's perfect features engender thoughts of succulent, sugar-laden bunches of Pinot Noir and Grenache with translucent purple skin. He can actually taste the phantom grapes as he imagines them bursting between his teeth. As it slowly sinks behind the mountains, the sun sprays light so warmly colored and so mordant that where touched, the darkening land appears to be wet with it and dyed forever. The grass grows red as well, no longer like a fireless burning, but instead, a red tide washing around his knees. He turns his back on the house and the vineyards, savoring the steadily intensifying taste of grapes. He walks westward into the shadows cast by the high forested ridges. He can smell the small animals of the open meadows cowering in their burrows. He hears the whisper of feathers carving the wind as a hunting hawk circles hundreds of feet overhead, and he feels the cold glimmer of stars that are not yet visible. In the strange sea of shimmering red light, the black shadows of overhanging trees flickered shark-swift across the windshield. On the winding two-lane blacktop, Laura Templeton handled the Mustang with an expertise that China admired, but she drove too fast. "You've got a heavy foot," China said. Laura grinned. "Better than a big butt." "You'll get us killed." "Mom has rules about being late for dinner." "Being late is better than being dead for dinner." "You've never met my mom. She's hell on rules." "So is the highway patrol." Laura laughed. "Sometimes you sound just like her."
"Who?"
"My mom." Bracing herself as Laura took a curve too fast, China said, "Well, one of us has to be a responsible adult."
"Sometimes I can't believe you're only 3 years older than me," Laura said affectionately.
26, huh? You sure you're not 126?
"I'm ancient," China said.
They had left San Francisco under a hard blue sky, taking a 4-day break from classes at the University of California, where in the spring they would earn master's degrees in psychology. Laura hadn't been delayed in her education by the need to earn her tuition and living expenses, but China had spent the past 10 years attending classes part-time while working full-time as a waitress, first in a Denny's, then in a unit of the Olive Garden chain, and most recently in an upscale restaurant with white tablecloths and cloth napkins and fresh flowers on the tables, and customers, bless them, who routinely tipped 15 or 20%. This visit to the Templeton's house in the Napa Valley would be the closest thing to a vacation that she'd had in a decade. From San Francisco, Laura had followed Interstate 80 through Berkeley and across the eastern end of San Pablo Bay. Blue heron had stalked the shallows and leaped gracefully into flight. Enormous, eerily prehistoric, beautiful against the cloudless heavens. Now in the gold and crimson sunset, scattered clouds burned in the sky, and the Napa Valley unrolled like a radiant tapestry. Laura had departed the main road in favor of a scenic route. However, she drove so fast that China was seldom able to take her eyes off the highway to enjoy the scenery. "Man, I love speed," Laura said. "I hate it. I like to move, streak, fly. Hey, maybe I was a gazelle in a previous life. You think?" China looked at the speedometer and grimaced. "Yeah, maybe a gazelle. Or a madwoman locked away in Bedlam. Or a cheetah. Cheetahs are really fast." "Yeah, a cheetah. And one day you were chasing your prey and ran straight off the edge of a cliff at full tilt. You were the Wile E. Coyote of cheetahs." "I'm a good driver, China."
"I know."
"Then relax."
"I can't."
Laura sighed with fake exasperation.
"Oh, ever?"
"When I sleep," China said, and she nearly jammed her feet through the floorboards as the Mustang took a wide curve at high speed. Beyond the narrow graveled shoulder of the two-lane, the land sloped down through wild mustard and looping brambles to a row of tall black alders fringed with early spring buds. Beyond the alders lay vineyards drenched with fierce red light, and China was convinced that the car would slide off the blacktop, roll down the embankment, and crash into the trees, and that her blood would fertilize the nearest of the vines. Instead, Laura effortlessly held the Mustang to the pavement. The car swept out of the curve and up a long incline. Laura said, "I bet you even worry in your sleep."
"Well, sooner or later in every dream there's a boogeyman. You've got to be on the lookout for him."
"I have lots of dreams without boogeymen," Laura said. "I have wonderful dreams."
"Getting shot out of a cannon?"
"That would be fun. No, but sometimes I dream that I can fly. I'm always naked and just floating or swooping along 50 feet above the ground, over telephone lines, across fields of bright flowers, over treetops. So free. People look up and smile and wave. They're so delighted to see that I can fly, so happy for me. And sometimes I'm with this beautiful guy, lean and muscular, with a mane of golden hair and lovely green eyes that look all the way through me to my soul. And we're making love in midair, drifting up there, and I'm having spectacular orgasms, one after another, floating through sunshine with flowers below and birds swooping overhead, birds with these gorgeous iridescent blue wings and singing the most fantastic bird songs you ever heard. And I feel as if I'm full of dazzling light, just a creature of light, and like I'm going to explode, such an energy, explode and form a whole new universe and be the universe and live forever. You ever have a dream like that?" China had finally taken her eyes off the onrushing blacktop. She stared in blank-faced astonishment at Laura. Finally, she said, "No." Glancing away from the two-lane, Laura said, "Really? You never had a dream like that?"
"Never."
"I have lots of dreams like that."
"Could you keep your eyes on the road, kiddo?"
Laura looked at the highway and said, "Don't you ever dream about sex?"
"Sometimes."
"And?"
"What?"
"And?" China shrugged. "It's bad." Frowning, Laura said, "You dream about having bad sex? Listen, China, you don't have to dream about that. There are a lot of guys who can provide all the bad sex you want."
"Ho, ho. I mean, these are nightmares. Very threatening."
"Sex is threatening?"
"Because I'm always a little girl in the dreams, 6 or 7 or 8, and I'm always hiding from this man, not quite sure what he wants, why he's looking for me. But I know he wants something from me that he shouldn't have, something terrible, and it's going to be like dying."
"Who's the man?"
"Different men."
"Some of the creeps your mother used to hang out with?"
China had told Laura a great deal about her mother. she had never told anyone else. Yeah, them. I always got away from them in real life. They never touched me, and they never touched me in the dreams. But there's always a threat, always a possibility. So these aren't just dreams. They're memories, too. I wish they were just dreams. What about when you're awake? Laura asked. What do you mean? Do you just turn all warm and fuzzy and let yourself go when a man makes love to you? Or is the past always there? What is this? Analysis at 80 miles an hour? Dodging the question? You're a snoop. It's called friendship. It's called snoopery. Dodging the question? China sighed. All right. I like being with a man. I'm not inhibited. I'll admit that I've never felt as though I'm a creature of light going to explode into a new universe, but I've been fully satisfied, always had fun. Fully? Fully. China had never actually been with a man until she was 21, and her intimate relationships now totaled exactly 2. Both had been gentle, kind, and decent men, and in each case China had greatly enjoyed the lovemaking. One affair had lasted 11 months, the other 13, and neither lover had left her a single troubling memory. Nevertheless, neither man had helped her banish the vicious dreams, which continued to plague her periodically, and she'd been unable to achieve an emotional bond equal to the physical intimacy. To a man whom she loved, China could give her body, but even for love, she could not entirely give her mind and heart. She was afraid to commit herself, to trust without reservation. No one in her life, with the possible exception of Laura Templeton, stunt driver and dream flyer, had ever earned total trust. Wind shrieked along the sides of the car. In the flickering shadows and fiery light, the long incline ahead of them seemed to be a ramp, as if they were going to be launching into space when they reached the top, vaulting across a dozen burning buses while a stadium full of thrill-seekers cheered. "What if a tire blows?" China asked. "The tires won't blow," Laura said confidently. "What if one does?" Wrenching her face into an exaggerated, demonic grin, Laura said, "Then we're just girl jelly in a can. They won't even be able to separate the remains into 2 distinct bodies, a total amorphous mess. They won't even need coffins for us. They'll just pour our remains in a jug and put us in 1 grave. And the headstone will read, 'Laura China Templeton Shepherd.' Only a Cuisinart would have been more thorough." China had hair so dark that it was virtually black, and Laura was a blue-eyed blonde, yet they were enough alike to be sisters. Both were 5'4" and slender. They wore the same dress size. Each had high cheekbones and delicate features. China had always felt that her mouth was too wide, but Laura, whose mouth was as wide as China's, said it wasn't wide at all, but merely generous, enough to ensure an especially winning smile. As Laura's love of speed proved, however, they were in some ways profoundly different people. The differences, perhaps more than the similarities, were what drew them to each other. "You think your mom and dad will like me?" China asked. "I thought you were worried about a blown tire." "I'm a multi-channel worrier. Will they like me?"
"Of course they'll like you."
"You know what I worry about?" Laura asked as they raced toward the top of the incline. "Apparently not death. You. I worry about you," Laura said. She glanced at China, and her expression was uncharacteristically serious. "I can take care of myself," China assured her.
"I don't doubt that. I know you too well to doubt that. But life isn't just about taking care of yourself, keeping your head down, getting through."
Laura Templeton, girl philosopher.
"Life is about living..."
"Deep," China said sarcastically.
"Deeper than you think."
The Mustang crested the long hill, and there were no burning buses or cheering multitudes, but ahead of them was an older model Buick cruising well below the posted limit. Laura cut their speed by more than half, and they pulled behind the other car. Even in the fading light, China could see that the round-shouldered driver was a white-haired elderly man. They were in a no-passing zone. The road rose and fell, turned left and right, rose again, and they could not see far ahead. Laura switched on the Mustang headlights, hoping to encourage the driver of the Buick, either to increase his speed or to ease over where the shoulder widened to let them pass. "Take your own advice. Relax, kiddo," China said.
"Hate to be late for dinner."
"From everything you've said about her, I don't think your mom's the type to beat us with wire coat hangers."
"Mom's the best."
"So relax," China said. "But she has this disappointed look she gives you that's worse than wire coat hangers. Most people don't know this, but Mom is the reason the Cold War ended. Several years ago, the Pentagon sent her off to Moscow so she could give the whole damn Politburo the look, and all those Soviet thugs just collapsed with remorse." Ahead of them, the old man in the Buick checked his rearview mirror. The white hair in the headlight beams, the angle of the man's head, and the mere suggestion of his eyes reflected in the mirror suddenly engendered in China a powerful sense of déjà vu. For a moment, she didn't understand why a chill came over her, but then she was cast back in memory to an incident that she had long tried unsuccessfully to forget. Another twilight, 19 years ago, a lonely Florida highway. "Oh, Jesus," she said. Laura glanced at her. "What's wrong?" China closed her eyes.
"China, you're as white as a ghost. What is it?"
"A long time ago, when I was just a little girl, 7 years old, maybe we were in the Everglades, maybe not, but the land was swampy like the Glades. There weren't many trees, and the few you could see were hung with Spanish moss. Everything was flat as far as you could see, lots of sky and flatness. The sunlight red and fading like now, a back road somewhere, far away from anything. Very rural, two narrow lanes, so damn empty and lonely." China had been with her mother and Jim Woltz, a Key West drug dealer and gunrunner, with whom they had lived now and then for a month or two at a time during her childhood. They had been on a business trip and had been returning to the Keys in Woltz's vintage red Cadillac, one of those models with massive tail fins and with what seemed to be 5 tons of chrome grillwork. Woltz was driving fast on that straight highway, exceeding 100 miles an hour at times. They hadn't encountered another car for almost 15 minutes before they roared up behind the elderly couple in the 10 Mercedes. The woman was driving, bird-like, close-cropped silver hair, 75 if she was a day. She was doing 40 miles an hour. Woltz could have pulled around the Mercedes. They were in a passing zone, and no traffic was in sight for miles on that dead flat highway. "But he was high on something," China told Laura, eyes still closed, watching the memory with growing dread as it played like a movie on a screen behind her eyes. "He was most of the time high on something. Maybe it was cocaine that day. I don't know. Don't remember. He was drinking, too. They were both drinking, him and my mother. They had a cooler full of ice, bottles of grapefruit juice and vodka." The old lady in the Mercedes was driving really slow, and that incensed Woltz. He wasn't rational. What did it matter to him? He could have pulled around her, but the sight of her driving so slow on the wide open highways infuriated him. Drugs and booze, that's all. So irrational. When he was angry, red-faced, arteries throbbing in his neck, jaw muscles bulging, no one could get angry quite as totally as Jim Woltz. His rage excited my mother, always excited her, so she teased him, encouraged him. I was in the back seat, hanging on tight, pleading with her to stop, but she kept at him. For a while, Woltz had hung close behind the other car, blowing his horn at the elderly couple, trying to force them to go faster. A few times he had nudged the rear bumper of the Mercedes with the front bumper of the Cadillac, metal kissing metal with a squeal. Eventually the old woman got rattled and began to swerve erratically, afraid to go faster with Woltz so close behind her, but too frightened of him to pull off the road to let him pass by. "Of course," China said. "He wouldn't have gone past and left her alone. By then he was too psychotic. He would have stopped when she stopped. It still would have ended badly." Woltz had pulled alongside the Mercedes a few times, driving in the wrong lane, shouting and shaking his fist at the white-haired couple, who first tried to ignore him and then stared back wide-eyed and fearful. Each time, rather than drive by and leave them in his dust, he had dropped behind again to play tag with their rear bumper. To Woltz, in his drug fever and alcoholic haze, this harassment was deadly serious business, with an importance and a meaning that could never be understood by anyone who was clean and sober.
To China's mother, Anne, it was all a game, an adventure, and it was she in her ceaseless search for excitement who said, "Why don't we give her a driving test?"
Walt said, "Test? I don't need to give the old bitch a test to see if she can't drive for shit."
This time, as Waltz pulled beside the Mercedes matching speeds with it, Anne said, "I mean, see if she can keep it on the road. Make it a challenge for her."
To Laura, China recalled, "There was a canal parallel to the road, one of those drainage channels you see along some Florida highways. Not deep, but deep enough. Waltz used the Cadillac to crowd the Mercedes onto the shoulder of the road. The woman should have crowded him back, forced him the other way. She should have tramped the pedal to the floor and pegged the speedometer and gotten the hell out of there. The Mercedes would have outrun the Cadillac, no problem. But she was old and scared, and she'd never encountered anyone like this. I think she was just disbelieving, so unable to understand the kind of people she was up against, unable to grasp how far they'd go even though she and her husband had done nothing to them. Waltz forced her off the road. The Mercedes rolled into the canal." Waltz had stopped, shifted the Cadillac into reverse, and backed up to where the Mercedes was swiftly sinking. He and Anne had gotten out of the car to watch. China's mother had insisted that she watch, too. "Come on, you little chicken. You don't want to miss this, baby. This is one to remember." The passenger side of the Mercedes was flat against the muddy bottom of the canal, and the driver's side was revealed to them as they stood on the embankment in the humid evening air. They were being bitten by hordes of mosquitoes, but were hardly aware of them, mesmerized by the sight below them, gazing through the driver's side windows of the submerged vehicle. "It was twilight," China told Laura, putting into words the images behind her closed eyes. "So the headlights were on, still on even after the Mercedes sank, and there were lights inside the car. They had air conditioning, so all the windows were closed, and neither the windshield nor the driver's side window had shattered when the car rolled. We could see inside, 'cause the windows were only a few inches underwater. There was no sign of the husband. Maybe he was knocked unconscious when they rolled. But the old woman, her face was at the window. The car was flooded, but there was a big bubble of air against the inside of the glass, and she pressed her face into it so she could breathe. We stood there looking down at her. Waltz could have helped. My mother could have helped. But they just watched. The old woman couldn't seem to get the window open, and the door must have been jammed. Or maybe she was just too scared and too weak." China had tried to pull away, but her mother had held her, speaking urgently to her, the whispered words borne on a tide of breath, sour with vodka and grapefruit juice. "We're different than other people, baby. No rules apply to us. You'll never understand what freedom really means if you don't watch this." China had closed her eyes, but she had still been able to hear the old woman screaming into the big air bubble inside the submerged car. Muffled screaming. Then gradually, the screaming faded. "Finally stopped," China told Laura. "When I opened my eyes, twilight had gone and night had come. There was still light in the Mercedes, and the woman's face was still pressed to the glass, but a breeze had risen, rippling the water in the canal, and her features were a blur. I knew she was dead, she and her husband. I started to cry. Waltz didn't like that. He threatened to drag me into the canal, open a door on the Mercedes, and shove me inside with the dead people. My mother made me drink some grapefruit juice with vodka. I was only 7. The rest of the way back to Key West, I lay on the back seat, dizzy from the vodka, half drunk and a little sick, still crying but quietly, so I wouldn't make Waltz angry, crying quietly until I fell asleep. In Laura's Mustang, the only sounds were the soft rumble of the engine and the singing of the tires on the blacktop. China finally opened her eyes and came back from the memory of Florida, from the long-ago humid twilight to Napa Valley, where most of the red light had gone out of the sky and darkness encroached on all sides. The old man in the Buick was no longer in front of them. They were not driving as fast as before, and evidently he had gotten far ahead of them. Laura said softly, "Dear God." China was shaking uncontrollably. She plucked a few Kleenex from the console between the seats, blew her nose, and blotted her eyes.
Over the past 2 years, she had shared part of her childhood with Laura, but every new revelation, and there was much still to reveal, was as difficult as the one before it. When she spoke of the past, she always burned with shame, as though she had been as guilty as her mother, as if every criminal act and spell of madness could be blamed on her, though she had been only a helpless child trapped in the insanity of others. "Will you ever see her again?" Laura asked. Recollection had left China half numb with horror. "I don't know." "Would you want to?" China hesitated. Her hands were curled into fists, the damp Kleenex wadded in the right one. "Maybe." "For God's sake, why?" "To ask her why. To try to understand. To settle some things. But maybe not." "Do you even know where she is?" "No. But it wouldn't surprise me if she was in jail. Or dead. You can't live like that and hope to grow old." They drove down out of the foothills into the valley. Eventually China said, "I can still see her standing in the steamy darkness on the banks of that canal, greasy with sweat, her hair hanging damp and all tangled, covered with mosquito bites, eyes bleary from vodka. Laura, even then, she was still the most beautiful woman you've ever seen. She was always so beautiful, so perfect on the outside, like someone out of a dream, like an angel. But she was never half as beautiful as when she was excited, when there'd been violence. I can see her standing there, only visible because of the greenish glow from the headlights of the Mercedes rising through the murky canal water. So ravishing in that green light. Glorious. The most beautiful person you've ever seen, like a goddess from another world." Gradually, China's trembling subsided. The heat of shame faded from her face, but slowly. She was immeasurably grateful for Laura's concern and support. A friend. Until Laura, China had lived secretly with her past, unable to speak of it to anyone. Now, having unburdened herself of another hateful, corrupting memory, she couldn't begin to put her gratitude into words. "It's okay," Laura said, as if reading China's mind. They rode in silence. They were late for dinner. To China, the Templeton house looked inviting at first glimpse. Victorian, gabled, roomy, with deep porches front and rear. It stood a half mile off the country road, at the end of a gravel driveway, surrounded by 120 acres of vineyards. For three generations, the Templetons had grown grapes, but they had never made wine. They were under contract to one of the finest vintners in the valley, and because they owned fertile land with the highest quality vines, they received an excellent price for their crop. Sarah Templeton appeared on the front porch when she heard the Mustang in the driveway, and she came quickly down the steps to the stone walkway to greet Laura and China. She was a lovely, girlishly slim woman in her early or mid-40s, with stylishly short blonde hair, wearing tan jeans and a long-sleeved emerald green blouse with green embroidery on the collar, simultaneously chic and motherly. When Sarah hugged Laura and kissed her and held her with such evident and fierce love, China was struck by a pang of envy and by a shiver of misery at never having known a mother's love. She was surprised again when Sarah turned to her, embraced her, kissed her on the cheek, and still holding her close said, "Laura tells me you're the sister she never had. So I want you to feel at home here, sweetheart. When you're here with us, this is your place as much as ours." China stood stiffly at first, so unfamiliar with the rituals of family affection that she didn't know quite how to respond. Then she returned the embrace awkwardly and murmured an inadequate thank you. Her throat was suddenly so tight that she was amazed to be able to speak at all.